This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The first U.S. face transplant recipient stepped forward yesterday. Connie Culp held a news conference at the Cleveland Clinic 5 years after a shotgun blast left little more than a hole where her nose used to be. She said when kids called her monster, she would flash them her driver's license picture to show them what she used to look like. With her new face, still a work in progress, she thanked the family of the donor who made it possible, thanked the plastic surgeons at the Cleveland Clinic, and told the world, do not judge people who look different.
Don't judge them, because you never know what happened to them. You never know what might happen to you. You might get in a car wreck and think you're beautiful one day. So don't judge people that don't look the same as you do, because you never know. One day it might be all taken away.
Some of us are born disfigured. Others are burned or scarred in accidents or on the battlefield. But the disfigured all live with stares and awkward glances from strangers and the discrimination that comes with it. If this is your story, give us a call. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, amid reports that the housing market has bottomed or even begun to rebound in some places, we want to hear from realtors about the business where you are. You can email us now, talk@npr.org. But first, living with disfigurement. David Roche was born with severe facial disfigurement. He now writes, performs, and speaks about it. His most recent book is The Church of 80% Sincerity, and he joins us today from his home in British Columbia. And it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Hello, Neil. Thank you.
And I wonder, did you see the news conference yesterday with the woman who received the face transplant?
I saw a lot of it on the internet, yes.
And what did you think?
Well, things like that are always very moving. And, you know, it's a new world. New things can happen. And I think it's fantastic what happened for her. It was interesting, people's comments about her, though. They all were saying, you know, like, oh, what a terrible thing. What a survivor, how wonderful she is, and stuff like that. There's still that element of it's a terrible tragedy and it's a pity. My experience, being born with a facial difference, is that it actually was in many ways a gift, because I was forced to look inside myself. So it's a little different than hers.
That word you used, I think, is probably pretty important. Pity.
Yeah. You know, that's what happens when the face is the locus of the human persona, or it's considered to be. And so a marred face often raises fears inside people. I think people are not so afraid of our faces as they are of their own fears. The fear that they can be disfigured, that not in the future, but that there's something wrong with them now. My experience after performing, after writing for 15 years, is that everybody feels disfigured. And those of us who are obviously so, we tend to be the ones who carry the weight of that fear for other people.
That's an interesting point, that some way all of us feel disfigured, and those who are most obviously so carry the weight for the rest of them. Nevertheless, I think Connie Culp's experience of being taunted as a monster by children, that can't be pleasant.
Oh, no, it is definitely not pleasant. And that's the world of facial difference, the constant stares, comments, occasional cruelties. It took me a long time to get over that. And here's the key. It's the first 5 minutes. That's not a time of hatred or prejudice or judgment, even on the side of children who might say monster. 99 and 99/100 of the time, it's getting used to difference. That's all. There's a great new book, Staring, by Rosemary Garland Thompson, that goes into the details about that sort of thing. And that's my experience, that it just takes people a while to get used to me. As my wife says, it's the second look that counts. It's what happens after that first 5 minutes.
David Roche is with us, a writer, performer, and keynote speaker born with severe facial disfigurement. If this is your story, too, give us a call. What is it like? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And David, just thinking about this, there must be two broad categories, those like you born with it, and those like Ms. Culp who had this happen to them as adults.
Yeah, in both cases, I think there's a grieving process, but I never knew what I had lost because it was always there. I always looked this way, but it's hard for me to imagine what happened to her and the difficulty of losing your face, losing your identity.
Nevertheless, she did not have to go through that as a child, and children, as we've noted, can be cruel.
Indeed they can. You know, sometimes I get a little grouchy, but most of the kids are honest and straightforward, and giving them the chance, they're fantastic.
Given the chance, it's breaking through that little bit of ice, that first 5 minutes.
My wife and I often present to middle schoolers, and when we first walk in, their faces are kind of stiff. They're nervous. They don't know whether to look at me or not or what to say, and sometimes their mouths fall open. But within 5 to 10 minutes, and I'm a funny guy. I'm not being funny now, Neil, but really I am on stage.
Okay.
They laugh, and their faces relax, and it's a totally different experience for them. Because they can. What I do on stage is I come out, people are nervous, I look grotesque, certainly from certain angles, and by the end of the show, I'm incredibly attractive because people have gotten to take that second look.
You make your living doing what you say, writing and talking and performing about, well, your life and what it's like to be you. Nevertheless, a lot of people who are born with the same condition that you have can't do that, and they have to work in the real world. Do you find that they... discrimination would be almost expected, wouldn't it?
It is expected because people don't know how to deal with it. What I did was I learned to discriminate against myself because you see the looks on other people's faces and you stay in a safe place. The worst thing that ever happened to me when I was a teenager, I wanted to study to be a Roman Catholic priest and I went to be interviewed at the Holy Cross Seminary at the University of Notre Dame, and I was told that I was too ugly to be a priest, which was an incredible shock because I grew up nurtured in church and school and family and friends, and the way I would have said that I was a child of God, and to me that was like hearing the voice of God telling me I was a monster. So that sense of myself really crumbled inside me, and I had to rebuild from there. So that was the first, big shock to me.
We're talking again with David Roche, and if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Troy's calling from Mesa, Arizona.
How you doing? I want to say thanks for putting this gentleman on. It brings back a lot of memories for what happened to me.
What happened to you?
When I was five, I was run over by a dump truck, and it left my right leg probably 70% scarred. And until I was about 17, I wasn't able to wear shorts just because everyone would think it was a burn or no one would believe the story. But I finally came into my own frame of mind and said, you know what, I don't really care what anyone else thinks. And if they're worried about that, well, then those are people I don't need to associate with. So I just wanted to call and share my experience. I appreciate it.
And Troy, thank you for that. But as you noted, this is something you could cover with a pair of long pants. So what did you think when you were hearing about Ms. Culp yesterday and that this was her face?
Well, good for her. I mean, if she has the strength to come out and show off, you know, what's happened to her and make people aware. I mean, that's one of the things, you know, when I was 5 to 17, you know, kids are cruel. They don't mean to be, but you know, their comments just come out. And so, yeah, you could wear pants, but I live in Arizona. You got to put some shorts on at some point, you know.
I guess you're right about that, Troy.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
That's my point, though, Neil, that everybody has something. The first time I ever talked about facial difference, this beautiful woman came up to me afterwards and told me how she related to what I said and how terrible it had been for her in school and that she was still very ashamed of her freckles. And, you know, I thought, oh, what? The heartbreak of freckles. I want to slap her. But I didn't, and that was the first inkling I had that we all carry it. But it still it is. I don't mean to make light of the fact that the face is where it's most significant.
Here's an email we have from Debbie in Little Rock, Arkansas. When I was 4 years old, I was messing around with plants in the yard and got poison ivy on my face. Most of the scars are on the right side of my nose. Since I'm African-American, the doctors were afraid that trying to remove the scar could make things worse. I'm 47 years old, and I've managed to accept the fact that people sometimes notice the scar, and it has caused me to overcompensate by being empathetic, generous, understanding, and a darn good makeup artist. But most of all, I have learned to excel in spite of it. And that's a story, too, because these present challenges to people if they can overcome them, as Troy did, as this Debbie writing us from Little Rock did. Well, that can put you in a whole other place, can't it?
Well, you know, I would question the use of the word of overcompensation. I would say that this woman has come to be at one with herself. She hasn't transcended her condition. It's been of great benefit to her and others. It's a whole different metaphor.
A whole different metaphor? In what's the metaphor you prefer?
You know, because you can be pushed into looking inside yourself, to finding your inner beauty. And it's not easy, okay? But everybody has to do that. So the metaphor can be actually one of healing rather than of some hideous tragedy. Again, I'm not trying to say, oh, it's all wonderful. If only everybody could be disfigured. But there is that other element to it.
David Roche, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your story.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
David Roche was born with facial disfigurement. He now writes, performs, and speaks about it, and he joined us today from his home in British Columbia. Well, is his story in some respect your story? Were you born disfigured? Did you become disfigured later in life as the result of an accident or on the battlefield? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We're going to get an update on what happened yesterday at the Cleveland Clinic when we come back from a short break. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about living with disfigurement. One study showed that 9 out of 10 people with facial disfigurements deal with prejudice at work, though the same study also showed that everybody, 100% of those surveyed in the questionnaire, all proclaimed to have no prejudice against those with facial disfigurements. If this is your story, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org, and just click on Talk of the Nation. Let's get Nora on the line. Nora's calling us from Des Moines.
Hi.
Hi, Nora.
I'm 14 years old, and I was born with a double cleft palate.
And that requires a lot of surgery.
Yeah, it does. I've been having surgeries pretty much since the day I was born.
And how's it working out?
It's pretty good. I'm having 2 surgeries this summer, and I have to have a lot of braces.
And that, besides all the time in the hospital, which can be a drag, and the surgery, which can certainly be a drag, you're going to be left with scars.
Yeah, I'll always have scars for the rest of my life, but my friends are really good about supporting me, and once you get to know somebody, like, with a disfigurement, you don't even notice it anymore.
Yeah, those are your friends, though. Other kids, are they as nice?
Well, whenever I go someplace new or something, there's always people that stare, but that's just because they don't know. So, like, over the years, I've learned to look past that.
It can't be easy, though. It's got to hurt.
Yeah, it does hurt a lot.
So you go back into surgery later this summer?
Yeah, I have 2 surgeries this summer to help fix the cleft palate.
And when do you think you're going to be over with it all?
I think I'll be over it. Well, I don't think I'll ever be over it. I'll always have to live with it because it's such a huge part of my story. But the last surgeries will probably be in my last year of high school.
Nora, you're a really smart and self-aware young lady. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. We mentioned at the beginning of this hour that Connie Culp spoke for the first time yesterday. Again, she's the first person in the United States to receive a face transplant. She and her team of doctors described the surgery and her remarkable recovery at a news conference at the Cleveland Clinic. Bree Zeltner was at the news conference, where she's medical reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and joins us today from the studios of member station WCPN in Cleveland. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, Neil. It's good to be here.
And one of the most interesting parts of seeing Connie Culp for the first time was understanding that this procedure is not over.
Oh, no. I wouldn't say it's far from over, but she does have a few surgeries in her future. They transplanted excess skin, actually, anticipating that some of it would be rejected, and it turns out that all of her skin is healthy. So she has, if you saw photos, she has some excess skin that they need to remove, and it looks like she'll have that done in about 4 or 5 months.
She's had 30 surgeries, we've heard.
Yeah, nearly 30 surgeries in her past, and that was all in an effort to reconstruct her face, to get some of that lost function. And that was done at the Cleveland Clinic by a lot of the same plastic surgeons that worked on her her face transplant. And unfortunately, they were unable to get any of the function back that she lost when she was shot in the face.
What was the extent of the damage then, and how much function after the transplant has she gotten back?
It was extensive damage then. She lost her nose, her lower eyelids, her upper jaw, her palate, so the roof of her mouth, her upper lip, and one of her eyes. The other eye was severely damaged. She had to breathe through a tracheostomy tube. She obviously couldn't chew very well, so... she couldn't breathe through her nose, clearly. She couldn't smell. She couldn't taste. And she had fragments of shotgun pellet sort of enmeshed in the bone of what was left of the bone of her face.
And now?
So now she, it's pretty amazing when you think about it. She has a new face. She has a nose, so she could immediately breathe through her nose. She still has the tracheostomy tube, I think, and they're planning to remove that pretty soon. But she is breathing through her nose. She can smell. She can eat solid food. She can drink through from a cup instead of through a straw. And all of that are things that we take for granted. And she can do those.
We could see her to the extent that we could read her expression, but we could see her overcoming a great deal in order to speak yesterday. Do we know why she decided to speak today or yesterday?
Well, I'm not sure why she chose yesterday as the particular day that she wanted to. It may have just been that she felt that she was ready on that day. I know that it had to have been a big decision for her. I know that she's planning on speaking to the media more about her experience. It was clearly, difficult for her. She's a very, lively person. She has a great sense of humor, and, she very clearly wanted to, give thanks to her doctors and nurses and to the donor family.
And what was different? This is the fourth overall. Obviously, what's different for us is the first American to receive it. But nevertheless, what was different about the surgery itself?
Well, the surgery was more complicated, I think, than any of the other face transplants that we've seen so far. She lost 80% of her face when she was shot, and so had to receive 80% of a donor face. So it was a lot more complicated than the partial face transplants that we've seen so far. So she had to receive a lot of the underlying nerve, muscle, artery, bone, tissue.
There are times in our lives when we think about this particular medical specialty and say, "Oh, it was only plastic surgery." This gives you a new appreciation.
Oh, absolutely. There was nothing. They underscored that yesterday. There was nothing cosmetic about this procedure. This was really to restore function that meant a lot to Connie and would mean a lot to any of us if we lost it.
Thanks very much, Bree. Appreciate your time today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bree Zeltner is medical reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and joined us today from the studios of our member station there, WCPN. Our next guest has had to learn how to live with disfigurement later in life. Army Sergeant Salvador Trujillo was injured by a roadside bomb in Iraq in June 2006. He suffered third-degree burns over 40% of his body. Today he joins us from his home in Tigard, Oregon. Nice of you to be with us today.
How you doing, Neil?
Can you describe what happened to you in the explosion?
Well, I was in a Bradley fighting vehicle. It's one of the, it looks like a tank, but it's not really a tank. And I was sitting the gunner seat, and when the ID went underneath us, went off, spraying us with fuel and flash burns, it automatically just turned it into flames. And luckily, we all managed to get out. There was four of us that got seriously burned. Three of us seriously. I was one of them, and I knew my face was affected because I was awake through the whole accident. And but I didn't really know how bad I was burned till I woke up 2 weeks after, and actually had bandages on my face, and I didn't have a face anymore.
And how did you feel at that particular moment?
I felt automatically as soon as I found that out. My heart was full of anger, still is, trying to cope with it, you know. But it was horrible because they took one of my priciest possessions. It was my face, you know.
Yeah, it's our identity, isn't it? Yeah.
Right, right.
What did your family and friends say when they saw you?
They were shocked too, but Now my wife doesn't even, when I ask her, she says she doesn't remember me how I used to be. She remembers me like how I am right now.
Hmm.
And but it was hard for them, you know. My daughter took a little bit to get used to, but she got used to it, and she doesn't see anything wrong with me.
So it's dealing with strangers now, that's the problem.
Right, right. Dealing with, you know, it's hard because you can't really, try to keep it professional and not say anything, but, you know, it just gets frustrating when people stare at you, and, you know, it's okay to get a glance and be like, oh, my God, what happened? But when you stare at them and, you know, you stare at me, it kind of frustrates me a little bit. So that goes back to, you know, filling me back up with anger, because I'd rather have them ask me, you know, what happened to you than just stare at me.
Right. Have you thought, earlier we spoke with a man who'd been disfigured from birth. Would it have been, this is an impossible question, is it easy, have you thought about having had this since you were a kid and what that might have been like as opposed to getting it as an adult?
No, it's never crossed my head, my mind, and but now I feel, you know, a lot for people that are disfigured. You know, I was never, you know, a mocker.
Mm-hmm.
Never tease them, but I would always wonder, like previous person that was talking about it, I always wonder what happened to them. And now I have that disfigurement, so therefore, it's kind of hard.
Do you still face more surgery?
Yes. The awesome people at UCLA and West LA VA Medical Center are. I'm so glad I got into a program called Operation Man before I medically retired. And those guys have just been awesome with me. And they actually looked a lot worse when I retired. And I like to put it in simple words, UCLA and VA down in L.A. have made me a lot prettier than I used to be. That's what I always tell them. And now I'm just having, you know, a little reconstructive surgery here and there. All the main parts of the most serious surgeries are done. And, but yeah, I will be having more surgeries here in June, I think, hopefully.
Well, we wish you the best and continued good luck.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate
it. That's retired Army Sergeant Salvador Trujillo, a veteran of the war in Iraq, medically retired after sustaining an injury in June 2006. Let's see if we can go to Kathy. Kathy calling us from Phoenix.
Hello.
Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hi, I wanted to talk about my niece who was born with a beautiful face, but she was born missing her right arm, right leg, and most of her left leg. and just to talk about the incredible difficulties that she's had as a teenager and a young adult finding employment.
Because of the, people are afraid of what other people are going to make of her?
I think that's it. I think one potential employer even voiced something to the effect of, I'm afraid that you might make people feel sad.
Huh. But there are all kinds of jobs where you don't necessarily meet and greet the public.
That's true, but her passion and her talent is in fashion design and marketing, and she's in fact degreed in that from the Los Angeles Fashion and Design Institute. She's very well credentialed. She's very good at what she does, very personal, so she's a natural to be in retail and out in the public. But finding a potential employer who sees those talents and see that she can be an asset to the organization has been an extremely frustrating experience for her.
Well, we wish her the best. Kathy, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking about living with disfigurement. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email from Tim in Miami. I lost the sight of my left eye from an accident at age 2. I fell out of my bed onto a nightlight, sort of ironic. My parents made sure I was never treated differently because of my lost sight. Growing up, I played sports, including baseball. I never knew what it was like to see with two eyes. I just managed with what I had. Today, I'm a museum art director in charge of the institution's visual identity. Let's go to David. David with us from Ada, Oklahoma. Ada, Ohio, excuse me.
Yes, hi.
Go ahead, please.
I'm going in as far as age goes, in two sides of age, dealing with scarring both physically and mentally. At age 12, I was in the fourth grade, and I had brain tumors removed. And, of course, my head was scarred and shaved. And that whole school year, I became the horseshoe head of the fourth grade. And that year was very mentally scarring. At the same time, though, I later on in life I realized it was both the not knowing of the students. They were innocent in that part, but the parents of the other friends of mine were guilty in a way of indirectly kind of telling their kids to, it's okay to be afraid of a person that looks different, and it's okay to not associate with them anymore.
And this was quite some time ago, David, and I can still hear the emotion in your voice.
Oh, yes. Now I'm 40, and I'm losing my hair. And so the scar's back out there where everybody can see it. But now today, dealing with life in itself, well, I've learned enough that it doesn't bother me. I go uptown and get my lunch, and I don't wear a hat anymore, and people can see the scar, both at church and uptown. But my point is that especially young kids, the parents can go out of their way to say it's okay to be curious and ask questions of the person that has that scar. And there's about two or three people in my fourth grade that were curious, and in a good way, and they helped me out by still associating with me. And their curiosity, coincidentally, later in life, they developed careers in sciences.
In the sciences, that's interesting.
I thought that was interesting, too. But curiosity, there's absolutely nothing wrong with curiosity, and parents need to tell that to their children when they have a friend that has a serious scar that comes up in their life.
David, thanks very much.
I'm glad I could tell America.
David calling us from Ada, Ohio, not Oklahoma. Here's an email that we have from Stephen in Louisville. I was born with a chest deformity. My breastbone protrudes in the center, and the bump is approximately 2 inches high and 3 inches long. I was also born without a left breast. You can tell something isn't quite right there, though, through most of my shirts. My childhood was scarred by this, and it sure makes my adulthood interesting at times. I have never been able to comfortably go about without a shirt, and going to a public pool or water park is very uncomfortable. I believe the only reason I go without a shirt at times now is to show my daughter that image isn't everything. So thank you for all your calls and your emails, and we appreciate it. Coming up next, if real estate is all local, tell us what's happening in the housing market where you live. We want to hear from real estate agents, buyers, and sellers. We're hearing reports from some economists, including Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, that in some places the bottom has been reached and prices are bouncing back. Tell us what's happening where you are. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.